Hi everyone. What you are about to hear this week on The Real Witches of the End Times is a special episode. I traveled with my friend Celeste Mott to Somerset, Kentucky, and we met up with Nathan Isaac, who hosts Pennyroyal Podcast. This interview is a debrief of Celeste and I's experience visiting this very, very strange place, and I hope that you enjoy the experience. Additionally, as you may have noticed, there has been a several week gap between this upload and the last previous upload I've done. This is because I took a break due to experiencing a lot of burnout from uploading almost every single week for a year and a half at this point. I really love doing this podcast, and I just want to make sure that I take care of myself as well, in addition to, you know, having other things going on in my life. And I'm also dealing with a lot of health problems. So because of this, going forward, I have decided to upload on a bi-monthly schedule as opposed to every single week. So you can anticipate 2 new episodes every month as opposed to 4. And it will be every other week that they're uploaded. If you want even more content, you can come hang out on Patreon, which is patreon.com/mothmana, where there's a new episode, a new exclusive bonus episode every month, as well as some other offerings. And if you would like to stay in the loop on whether or not an episode will be uploaded the week that you are thinking, you can follow me on Instagram at MothManaTaro and Twitter at ManaAlen. I try to be as clear as possible about what's going on with uploading schedules, so definitely do so if you are interested. Thank you all for supporting the podcast and hanging out, even though there's been a little bit of a lull here. I hope you enjoy this episode, and I'll see you on the other side. You're listening to The Real Witches of the End Times, transmissions straight from the underworld.
Did you guys even see the turtle?
No, I didn't see that one.
All right, so there was a turtle, and then Amy was like, and I saw, she didn't see it. I said, there's a turtle in the road. And she said, you've got to turn around so I can go move it. And I was like, dude, there's not going to be any more cars on this road, you know? Like,
right.
It'll make it across the road. She's like, but what if it's just, it's standing there and it's just enjoying the rain, you know? And she's like, cars just came by, you know? Like, we just drove by. And I'm like, if you really want me to turn around, I'll turn around. It's not a big deal, you know? And then she was like, well, I said, I don't want to confuse them. And then they're like,
suddenly it's like,
where's he going? I thought we were supposed to turn left. You're turning right to turn around, you know?
Oh,
and I was like, I swear, I'll bring you back tomorrow. And if there's a turtle smash in the road, I will apologize to you profusely.
Oh,
you know?
I love that.
And she was like, no, it's fine. It's, you know. But then you guys texted me, and I was like, see, they must have seen the turtle. Maybe they went back for the turtle.
We did move our turtle off the road.
We did. So. I mean, I started recording during this turtle story, so maybe we can just start with the turtle. I mean, so Celeste and I were in a different car than Nathan is here, and we passed on the way out Haunted Cave Road, and both of us thought, what? Why would you name a road that?
Yeah.
So on the nose. So we turn around and, well, actually you asked Spotify Mansley, should we go down this road?
Yeah, what did this,
it was Crane Kiss by our friend Tamarin. It was friend's songs.
Really? And I think even though the song itself has nothing in the lyrics that indicates like a strong yes, it was just such a weird, because we know Tamarin through like phenomena related stuff kind of. We know her through Marco and Marco's Patreon. So that felt like a very solid, like, thumbs up yes. And I think you said, you were like, if Tamarin were here, Tamarin would go down Haunted Cave Road. I was like, that's true. She would. So we turned around and we went back. And, you know, we had no idea because obviously we're not from here.
Like a mile long. Max.
Yeah, very, very short
road.
So, like, we passed this cute little house on the, right on the corner. And then we're maybe only, like, you know, a minute down the road, less than a minute, and there's just this turtle crossing the road. And, like, there are turtles in Louisiana, and we see them occasionally, but it's not, like, a super common thing. So I, like, stop the car, and I'm like, is that a fucking turtle? Is that what I'm seeing
right now? I've never seen a turtle in the wild.
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
So we both get out of the car, and we're, like, just staring at this turtle. It just seemed like a strange moment to, like, turn unexpectedly down this strangely named road to suddenly encounter this turtle that stops our car. And we just both kind of look at it for a while. And then I, like, nudge it, you know, into the underbrush with my foot. I don't really know how to handle a turtle, so I was just like, you know.
Ooh. And we'd gotten out of the car. So we were out of the car, away from the car during this.
Yes.
And then Magic of the Turtle is like, cool. We got back in the car and we drove down the road. Not that far. Maybe
it can't be longer than, like, a mile. It's a short road that ends in, like, a little dead end cul-de-sac type deal. But there's nothing on this road, as you know, I'm sure, besides, like, the house in the corner. And then an abandoned house at the very end of the road, opposite what looks like an active homestead with people living in it. I am, like, a sucker for abandoned shit, and I've been saying this whole trip, I'm like, just if you want, man, if you want to pull off the road and look at some abandoned shit, I'm down. I mean, I don't want to push you, but, you know, if you want to, just tell me. And so we see this abandoned house, and I'm like, yeah, this seems like a good idea. Let's get out of this car and look at this abandoned house. What could go wrong? And then I notice out of the corner of my eye that the house on the opposite side of the street, and it's just fields all around, you know, it's like fields and woods, and there's this, like, shaggy black dog, like, standing in this field just eyeballing us.
Mm-hmm. Not near the house or anything like that?
It was, I mean, I think it belonged to the people who lived in the house, but it wasn't on a leash. Mm-hmm. It was just, like, in the field.
It didn't even look like people were really home. Like, there was a car, but there wasn't, like, you could kind of see in the windows, and there
wasn't a lot of activity going on.
Was there a car there though?
There was, but yeah, it seemed kind of weird, and we were turning our car around.
Yeah, we had already decided, like, maybe we don't get out of the car and look at this abandoned house. Something just felt weird, and then I noticed this dog staring at us, and I was like, oh, that dog. I think I said to you out loud, I was like, that dog's really eyeballing us. Mm-hmm. And then as we're turning the car around to leave, this dog just fucking runs at the car, and it is, like, alongside the driver's side window, like, jaw, like, wide, teeth pulled back, like, salivating.
You had to speed up to, like, it was running along the car.
Yeah, and I've never been in that situation, so I was like, am I going to accidentally pull this dog under the car and run it over? I'm terrified. I don't know how to make it go away. I don't know how long it's going to chase the car for. And so we just, like, fucking accelerate out of Haunted Cave Road, followed by this dog.
Black dog, too.
Right? A black dog, yeah. And it wasn't like a stereotypical,
it didn't,
like,
look like a Rottweiler, like
people
dog
would think. It would look kind of like a sheep herding black dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the thing is, like, us pulling onto Haunted Cave Road and us booking it out of there were five minutes.
Like, yeah.
5 minutes. There was, like, just the same Sharon Van Etten song playing the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just very bizarre. And, like, obviously, we're in a rural area. People have farmland, and they have farm dogs and so forth. And I should have been a bit smarter than to, like, even consider for a second getting out of my car at the end of, like, fucking Terminal Road in rural Kentucky. But this dog did not look like a guard dog. It looked like a, like, cheerful family pet. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly it's just, like, coming at us.
Well, the weird part too is this is the, well, we didn't know that there was an actual cave at the end of this road. I mean, it was implied, but we didn't know. We didn't hear of this road before. And then this is the point where I messaged you, like, is it normal to see turtles just around? Because I was curious. And then we explained a little bit further after you told us that the story with your wife seeing a different turtle.
Yeah. At the same time.
Yeah.
Which shows this moment of, like, doubling, but also confusion.
Yeah.
And then you told us your Haunted Cave Road story.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that was really strange, too, when you brought up... Well, so where we live, where the new farm, right, is sort of, like, behind that, you know, like, okay, like, further on. And so often we come past Haunted Cave Road. And every time, and there's a place out 192 called B-Rock. And a lot of people go hiking out there and camping and stuff. So Amy likes it out there. So we've been, and she grew up on 192. So, you know, we go on that road frequently. Every time we pass through, I'm always like, Haunted Cave Road. You know, like, Haunted Cave Road.
As you should. Yeah. What a name.
And so, but yesterday, Amy was talking to her neighbor, and she said it just came out of nowhere. The neighbor was talking about moving, because we had moved from downtown to out of town. And so our neighbor was like, yeah, we've been thinking about that too. Me and my husband, he hunts on Haunted Cave Road, and there's a little house out there at the end of the road. And we've been thinking, you know, our friends allow him to hunt out there, but they're moving and they want us to move into that house.
Wow.
And that's why I was asking if there's a car there.
Probably got chased by their dog.
Yeah, probably so,
yeah.
But I wondered if they had already moved, and then if it was just like a dog in the wild, you know.
Which would have been super creepy.
That would have been really creepy. But he told, so it's strange that, you know, Amy came home and she was like, oh yeah, they're talking about Haunted Cave Road and they've got a ghost story. And I was like, what? And so she tells me that while he was hunting out there, it was him and like a friend of his and his friend's son, like a young kid. And she said, this kid is not like a kid that believes in ghosts, just like a really straight, you know, straight shooter kid, just, you know, very, you know, not into paranormal stuff. And that they were out there hunting, and all of a sudden he said, did you guys see that kid? And, you know, the adults were like, what? You know, what are you talking about? And he said, I just saw a kid in Civil War clothing, in breeches and a white shirt, standing over in the weeds, staring at us. And then when he looked at it was gone. Yeah. And so, but she had just told her that the night before, you know,
right.
Night before last, you know.
Right.
And then the next day.
we stupidly went down this road.
Right.
Weird shit happened.
But there is a haunted cave out, well, there's a cave out there, and then I sent that video to you guys. And so that's the one where they've got the gate on it. And, and so it's a well-maintained. Obviously, there are lots of caves in the county, but that's a well-maintained cave. The woman's, you know, story about her, like, her first date with her husband was out
cute.
There, you
oh
know.
My gosh.
Like, but that must be the couple that owns that farm.
Yeah, I would assume.
Because
from that video, which is this, you know, this lady talking about, she said that her first date with her husband was in this cave and they had this picnic, but then she like was feeling stuff tugging on her and all this other stuff,
like an energy swooped down from the ceiling, you know, and she felt it, which I thought was interesting that she said energy or like you know, it's
and
an odd way.
Is also like an interesting word to use. And then in this video, which I guess was shot for like a local news segment or whatever, the reporter also feels something tug at her ponytail in this recording.
Yeah.
But they imply in that video that the cave is like open and that people come to it all the time. And after our experience yesterday, I'm like, do they?
Yeah.
Because your dog is going to eat people.
Yeah. And also it's like, do people just come knock on the door and they're like,
can we see your haunted cave?
Can I see the cave? You know, they're like, yeah, come on, you know, but who knows? It is, I mean, it's just another one of those interesting things about Somerset, you know, another little pin on the map, you know, where it's like, here's a place where some strange shit's going down.
There
you know?
Does appear to be, like, from our, what, like, 3-4 days here, just more strange shit per capita than, like, other places.
There was a bunch of places, too, I wanted to, and I still will send you guys this just in case you're like, oh, we'll get, you know, 30
if I come
to,
back.
You know, yeah. There's Short Creek, which is the shortest creek in North America, supposedly.
It's
and
a good name.
Right?
It's very on the nose here in some of the Haunted Cave Road, okay. Short Creek.
People don't mince. You know, it's like, that's it. But it is, like, it's a creek that it goes underground and then comes back up where a cave is and then goes back into the ground. And so tons of people have come from various parts of the U.S. to, like, paint this thing. And it is an actual famous place, but it's supposedly haunted also. It's also like a lover's lane, you know, for high school kids will party. There's always beer cans everywhere. But whenever the water is low and it's kind of dry, it drops down almost completely. And you can walk from that cave and it goes a mile to the opening of another cave. So you can go all the way underground and come back
weird.
Up. And it's like a huge thing. Some people kayak it too when the water's kind of low, but it's it's extremely dangerous. But,
right.
And there's a spring that supposedly feeds into it as well. So they put blue dye. A diver went into tried to swim up through it to find it. And there's, you know, from UK, from the University of Kentucky. So a lot of stories about it. And then across the road from it is an abandoned house. that there are all kinds of like weird symbols in and stuff like that. And then just further, just beyond that is the location of the Short Creek School. And that's one of the places here in town where someone tried to poison these like 22 school children by pouring arsenic into their water supply.
Whoa.
And they never found out who tried to murder the children. And it's just another one of those, you know, the more that we went back through the newspaper archive and kept finding these like outlandishly like violent, weird stories, that was one of them, was the attempted poisoning of the children at the Short Creek School, you know.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So that that place has all kinds of like weirdness associated with it. And it's only like 5 minutes from downtown.
Yeah.
10 minutes.
Well, that's for a list.
You know.
Yeah, I'm looking at the pictures of Short Creek now, and I'm like, wow, this is beautiful.
Yeah, it's like it's a really beautiful place. And tons of people have painted the thing. And,
that's really pretty.
Yeah. So it's
Are there a lot of natural springs, like in some stuff?
Yeah. I guess I didn't think about when we moved down here, but now that we've gotten more out into the country, the new farm we've got has a natural spring, pond on it that's spring fed. And downtown behind our house, downtown right now in the Rocky Hollow, there's like two springs down there. So I think it's this karst landscape, you know, where it's the limestone has sort of been eaten away and it's created this crazy cave system.
And that's very witchy and very fey, the natural spring. Sort of seeded throughout folklore and so forth. I did a ritual a couple of months ago, and we needed spring water for it from a natural spring, and it was a struggle in New Orleans, Louisiana, to find anywhere that had a natural spring.
Really?
We had to drive like 2 hours away.
No way.
Yeah.
So it's not a common thing.
No, it's just too swampy, you know, because we're on a swamp. I mean, you have swamp water you could find, but it's not very magical. I mean, it's magical for other reasons.
Yeah.
Not.
That's
was it you? Did you ask me if you could drink swamp water? Somebody
I did not ask you that.
That didn't
listen. I've never been to Louisiana.
You're like, no.
Come on.
Somebody, I wish I could remember who it was, but somebody not that long ago was like, do you drink the swamp water? And I was like, no.
Are they talking about like that when they can take salt water, you know, and they can remove the salt out of it through some like reverse osmosis?
Whoever asked me this, I think, was implying like whether you could just literally stick a cup in the swamp and drink it. And I was like, I mean, you could.
Are they from the city?
I wish I could remember. Right. Who was this who asked me this question? If you're listening, I'm sorry to put you on blast.
You can't even do that, like, really with river water. Even
no.
If it's clean.
No, you're
so,
not supposed to. Yeah.
There's a brain-eating amoeba in the river water in New Orleans. It's called Neglia fowleri.
Yeah, that's been on the news lately,
too. It makes you very unwell. Possibly it kills you, actually. I'm not sure. I think it gives you meningitis.
I just noticed also that this painting on the wall is of... mine hole.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It was up a mine, yeah.
Yeah, we noticed that.
I was
like well,
we feel like the decor in this Airbnb is also very inside of a mine shaft vibe.
Yeah, it's got that kind of like rustic,
the ceiling
exposed beam look.
But that's like a really purposeful choosing of a
it's interesting,
piece of
isn't
art,
it?
You know? Yeah. Like, because at first I was like, is it a mine or is it? But then you see there's a derrick in the background too, thing.
No, that was my first thought, was that it was. It almost looks like an iron ore mine.
Yeah. That's strange.
Weird. Yeah, there's been just... What a strange time.
Well, maybe I'll give some background for... I'll do the recording. Yeah, this is definitely different than my normal podcasting because I started this podcast during the pandemic. So sitting with two people is weird to record. I have done maybe 5 or so podcasts with people in person, but again, I've got Celeste Mott here and I've got Nathan Isaac. These are both people I've met through online paranormal world primarily, and we are now in Somerset, Kentucky. Celeste and I are visiting. This is the first time we've ever hung out in person.
Yes.
We planned a trip together. It's gone very well, and you know, typically this is the type of situation I feel like 10 years ago people were like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, right. This is a very crazy choice that you're embarking upon.
Yeah. But Nathan Isaac here, for those who don't know, is the creator of Pennyroyal Podcast, and they are in the process of recording for season 2, and it was through listening to the first season of Pennyroyal that Nathan and I ended up meeting, and we recorded an episode for my podcast that essentially just became that interview and then chatting afterwards of like, wow, there's a lot of weird stuff intertwined with both of us chatting as well, and lots of seemingly retro causality. And I'm now literally here in Somerset, and
which is kind of crazy.
It is really crazy. Because, you know, I think people that I ended up telling, like, oh, I'm going to, like, rural Kentucky. I'm like, okay, that's very cool, but why are you doing that? Yeah. And you can't really explain it unless you understand.
Yeah.
I got my hair done, like, the day before we came out, and my hairdresser was asking me where I was going. And I as we said earlier, I was trying to keep it a little bit on the down low that I was going to Kentucky just because I didn't want it. I don't know. I felt weird about it. I was just like, I'm just going to just, like, keep
it to
myself.
Like, a magic... We wanted no white noise magically of us to do kind of, like, this personal endeavor.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, not too many, like, outside opinions influencing what was going to potentially happen here or so forth. But I told my hairdresser, because I was like, she's my hairdresser. She's not, like, as far as I know, plugged in to anything.
Right.
I'm sure she has a rich and beautiful life, but she's, you know, I was not thinking to myself my hairdresser is part of the paranormal community. So I told her that I was going to rural Kentucky, and she said, oh, that's kind of weird. Why? And I said, well, you know, my friend Manna has a friend, Nathan Isaac, and, you know, he does this podcast called Pennyroyal. Kind of talks about, like, high strangeness and, you know, like, paranormal phenomenon, like, you know, kind of UFO-type things and all this other stuff in this part of Kentucky. And I told her there's all these weird stories about this part of Kentucky, you know, cryptids and UFOs, and she stops dyeing my hair and she's like, that's interesting, one of my friends has been seeing a lot of UFOs lately. I was like, I'm sorry, what? And she's like, yeah, like, here in town there's just been, like, a bunch of weird phenomena recently and, like, weird UFOs. I wonder if my friends listen to that podcast. I bet they have. And I was like, yeah, this is weird now. And, it turned out that, in actual fact, the friend she was talking about is friends with friends of mine, because New Orleans is very small, and this guy's been seeing UFOs, and it's all...
No shit.
Yeah, and so then, just weird, it's just all weird, you know? And then it turned out that she was from Rhode Island, which is where Manna currently lives, mm-hmm. and just, like, all these little...
two things really quick. It's funny how, like, it's weird how all of these things are connected to, you know, and, like, the sort of the strands that kind of mm-hmm. go out. A friend of mine went out to Seattle for a wedding a few weeks ago and just was around some family, some cousins, and they're like, where'd you move to? And she moved from Boston or somewhere. She moved here to study folklore but wrestling folklore, like regional community wrestling. Yeah, she's a folklorist, like a PhD, right? And so she got a grant from the government to study wrestling narratives.
Wow.
As modern folklore, right? And that's how she ended up meeting her current partner, because he was part of that community. He's great too. But she had flown out for a wedding, and she was talking to somebody, and they were like, well, where'd you move to? And she said, oh, I moved to Kentucky to, you know, study this folklore stuff. And they're like, we're at in Kentucky. And she was like, Somerset. And the guy was like, I was just listening to the radio and I heard a guy last night talking about Somerset, Kentucky, here in Seattle. And it was the night that I was on Coast to Coast.
Oh my god.
So the next day, and the guy was like, Harris, tell some crazy stories about that place, you know? And so she messaged me. She's like, dude, check out how small the world this is, you know? Yeah. And I was like, that's so strange. But yesterday, right before we saw you guys, and Amy didn't tell me this until we were driving back after we went down to the mine, right? And we're driving, and she's telling me that, or I think it was afterwards, but she's telling me that this old man, they went to pick blueberries early in the morning. Like, got up and I hung out with Fable and Story, and she, like, went and to pick these on this farm, and you can go do it and, like, give them $10 and get all you want, you know. And so they were there, and this old man, she said he was ancient, you know, and they were getting the blackberries and they've been picking. She said, out of nowhere, and she said, it doesn't even know why, he said, my son saw a UFO last night. And she was like, what? And he was like, yeah, they were down here on the road here. There was a big light floating in the sky. And they got in the car and they chased it, you know. And he's telling this whole thing. And I was like, are you serious? He's like, yeah. And but there is a, like right now, there's a UFO flap in this area, Russell Springs. Monday we're having a guy come who's been tracking all this stuff to talk to us, or tomorrow. But apparently there's like numerous, like over 30 sightings in the last 2 weeks.
Whoa.
In this general area.
We have to get in the car tonight and go for a drive.
Yeah. Because I've been wanting to go too, just because, you know, it's weird, you know, when they have flaps like this, because it doesn't happen all the time.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a weird little spike.
Yeah. So, but he's been actually like, you know, when people post about it, he's been watching, and so, and people have been sending him stuff, and
really,
so he's actually been tracking. He does Midnight in Kentucky, which is another podcast.
Okay.
And so I was like, hey dude, you know, can we talk to you Monday night, and mm-hmm. you give me kind of a weather report, you know, on like the UFOs in the air.
Absolutely.
But this is, for some weird reason, this is, but again, is it like this every July? I haven't paid attention because, you know, I've really only been focused on this stuff the last couple of years. But even, you know, we were talking about the July 4th, the aphelion, you know, that it's the Earth is the furthest from the sun, you know, this week, you know. And then 7/7 obviously is a thing. So it's like, if we were to look at UFO reports in this area, is there a spike always around this time, you know?
Well, I remember I recorded an interview with Dana a couple weeks ago, and she even said that she's found that, like, when they visited here, it always just felt weirder during the summer than it did during the winter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It does feel sort of not dead here, you know, in an inappropriate way to describe it, but definitely the winter feels like things are calmer. I don't know why the summertime here feels, I don't know.
Well, again, I mean, that loops back to so much fae lore, which is that they are like the summer people, and they come like back in the spring down from the hills.
Well, is it the Oakwood King battles?
The Oak King and the Holly King.
And the Holly King and that whole cycle, you know? And that's what got me talking to Dan about Oakwood, which I just passed Oakwood to go grab the coffee. And I was going to ask you guys, did you drive over just to see Oakwood?
What's Oakwood?
Oakwood is the mental health facility where... I'll tell you.
Nathan's got this like little smile on his face. He's like,
you don't know?
Like the Santa Claus of Strange Stories just, like, rolled into town.
I love... This is fascinating. So like, when we were digging into all this stuff, one of the places that kept popping up was Oakwood, which was this in 1973 it was opened up as, and again, when I tell you this, it's like, this isn't possible that all of these things are in this one place, right? You know, it's just like another thing. We're like, what? It's just this weird layer cake, you know. But in 1973 they opened up Oakwood as an experimental mental health facility. Right. And so in the U.S., it was Vietnam, you know, Vietnam was going on. And so people were coming back, and it was like, really, treatment was not good. And so they created Oakwood and put it here for some reason. And so it was like very non-traditional and high profile, because they had like NBC Dateline or Nightline, one of their main shows, came down right after they opened the place up in 1973 and filmed it, and, you know, try to do this thing where it's like, look at how we, you know, we're really turning the corner in the mental health care, you know, industry here in America. And within 6 weeks of that opening, there was an anonymous letter that was sent to the governor of Kentucky, the head of the state police, the mayor here in town, and the sheriff. And that letter, which no one's seen the letter, but we know what the responses to the letter were, because they sent the state health director down here and had a press conference, and he answered each of the points in the letter one by one, but didn't say what was asked. He just said, you know, answer them, right? I filed a FOIA with the state of Kentucky, but I haven't gotten anything back yet. I have been successful with some other FOIA requests. The Guterma one, I got 1,600 pages on him from the FBI, which was like, oh my God, this is weird.
Damn.
You know, that's a large file, you know. And, and then I did a CIA one for him too, but I haven't gotten that one back. But the FBI one worked, and I was amazed. But I'm trying to get these files on Oakwood, because in that letter, they alleged, and this is 6 weeks after the place opened, they alleged that there was a witch cult. And they actually used the phrase witch cult, practicing magic and seances in the tunnels underneath the facility, right? And that they were channeling entities, and that they were burning symbols. And this is, quote, burning symbols into the backs of some of the residents, right?
Wow.
And so I've got all these newspaper articles about this. I'm like, are you fucking shitting me? Like, what the fuck is this, right? And again, it's this weird, the subterranean tunnel element to this, you know, like it just keeps recurring. You know, there's even another sanitarium that's close to downtown that was turn of the century, and it had tunnels, and there were murders in the tunnels, you know. And again, you know, obviously all the cave stuff, the mine stuff, that there's tunnels underneath the town, you know. And so it's like, it's weird that that's the subterranean theme and current keeps reappearing. Yeah. But so I'd heard all these stories. There are lots of strange deaths associated with Oakwood, but also this whole thing of Oakwood, right? And like the Oak King and Pan. And so, and also this place is really strange. That's why I want you guys to like drive out there and see it. It's just on 27. I mean, it's like 5 minutes from here, you know, and you can't get to it because there's a guard shack, but you can see it from the road. And it's so strange because it's buried, all the buildings, and they're cottages. It's a facility where it's like 24 separate cottages, or I think 12 or 24, and the patients live in them as residents rather than in separate rooms, you know what I mean? And so it's buried under the ground because it was supposed to be constructed in the desert out west. And it's designed so that it could withstand high winds on flat desert, but they didn't change that, and they kept it the same. And so I interviewed someone who found out about the original architecture of it, right? And then they hired a really famous graphic designer named Michael Greer to, and he's designed most of the like most famous corporate logos. He's from here. He teaches it in Rhode Island at the University of Rhode Island Design or whatever it is, and. But he's from Somerset, and he randomly got the bid. He was bidding on it with the, you know, government or whatever that they were doing at the time, and he got it. And then he was like, "Where is this place?" And they're like, "Oh, Somerset." And he's like, "It's my hometown."
Whoa, weird.
And so it has all these like strange pieces of art. Like they were trying to do this whole thing that was weird and new, you know. And there was a dragon in the main office area. And the people would come and like give it presents. The residents would, and they would get presents from it. And I was like, "What?" And there's a whole article about the dragon, right?
Oh my god!
And I'm like, this to me, you know, I'm reading this, and you know, it's weird because from my perspective, I'm like, this has ritualistic overtones. You know, of course, the article's not that way. It's just like, oh, you know, they've got this crazy papier-mâché dragon, and that the residents can like give things and get candy from. And I'm like, fuck, you know, so when you look at Oakwood from above, it looks like a sigil. Like it is designed, if you just get on Google Maps and zoom down, it is the craziest fucking looking thing. Okay, so and there was a boy that was found dead in a pond just adjacent to it, who had escaped and like was afraid of water, and then they find him dead in a pond. Like just more and more of things like that, right? So I'm talking to Dan about this and telling him that, you know...
We're talking about Dan Dutton.
Dan Dutton, yeah. And I brought up the Oakwood King. We're talking about Penn. He said, "I've got an Oakwood story for you." And see, I'd interviewed the Rod Zimmerman, who appears in Pennyroyal. He's sort of the town historian. His father, whenever this scandal broke, they fired everybody at Oakwood, and then they replaced the head of the of Oakwood with his stepfather. And so his stepfather has and he has seen them, all the investigation documents, right? And so he had seen all this stuff. The guy that was fired, that was the head of all this shit, was never came to work in normal clothing. He came in a robe. He had a beard, beads in his beard, and it was like Esalen Institute shit.
Wow.
Right? They were all... Okay, so I found all these articles about the fact that they... he was reprimanded for not dressing professionally.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so it's like, who is this guy that's implementing this experimental sort of mental health stuff? And then this scandal breaks. And they're so Rod tells us that there was one of the cottages... was for high-functioning individuals, that everybody else was low-functioning, but one was for savants, right?
Mm.
And I was like, well, that's really strange. Didn't tell Dan this, right? And after Rod told us that, I interviewed other people who confirmed that that was true. It was from, like, 73 to 1981, there were savants there. So Dan tells me, I've got a story for you. And he says, there was a woman that worked there, and he was like, she had a thing for me, and she was... trying to get me to come there and paint with these residents that she said were extremely special. And he didn't know anything about this, right? And he straight up tells me that she says that they were inhabited by alien intelligences that had possessed their bodies. And that they were trying to deliver a message to humans to save humanity. And I was like, what the fuck, dude? You know? And that there were 9 of them, right?
Yeah.
And so he said, he was like, well, I was like, she's fucking crazy. You know? Or, she's eating too much acid, you know?
So, I feel like you have to be a special kind of person for Dan Dutton to look at you and go, you're crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Now that you guys have met Dan, you know, it's like you got to really be, you know.
Really out there.
Yeah. So she's trying to get him to come paint with them, right? And teach them painting. And he's like, no, and you're crazy. This sounds ridiculous, right? So finally, he acquiesces. She sends a car for him. He couldn't drive it. He was like, you know, wasn't driving at the time. And he's like, fine, I'll go, you know. So they pick him up. They take him over there, right? He goes in the back. She's not there, but there's another one of these caretakers for this specific group. He said, and he's telling me this, right? And he said he gets there and he goes toward that cottage and he sees all of these people on their hands and knees eating popcorn out of the grass. And he said, that's the last thing I remember, Nathan. And then 2 hours later, I was being driven back. And his voice breaks and he goes, I'm telling you, in this moment, it was like, because his work is about memory and about creating memory palaces. And he has an incredible memory. He's like, I'm telling you, I've never thought back to that moment, but I can't remember what happened. And I'm telling you that all I remember is then being driven back 2 hours there. I know I was there for 2 hours. And I was like, you don't know what happened? He was like, no. And he was kind of freaked out because it was like suddenly thinking back, his memory was blocked. So then he tells me when he goes back, that afternoon is when he received the inspiration for the Stone Man and the Secret Commonwealth and you know, the Fawn. All those things came and started that day. So then it's like, were there some type of extra-dimensional intelligences that set some of this in motion in 1979 when Dan was there? And then or is it retrocausal? Also, it's like, why the... Well, because it was like, this sounds like fucking Stranger Things, you know?
Yeah.
But then, he wouldn't tell me who it was, but I found out who it was. and now it makes sense, and it is, like, it is a real thing. Like, they really had these savants there, and these people that were working there believed that they were were inhabited by these alien intelligences. And I was like, what the fuck? These, you know, we got the bait cabals down here, all these people, all this channeling shit, mm-hmm. you know? And then in 73 is when that scandal happened, you know? And then it's like, this was in 79. And then we can't find any trace of them after 81, so they moved the savants.
Huh.
But it's like, I don't know. I mean,
well, we did notice, like, literally as we were driving, and we didn't know any of this before, and we were driving in on Thursday, we noticed there's a very striking amount of things with oak in the name in town. Like, we thought that was really weird. And then that's, like, something that's particularly significant to me, to the point where I was kind of, like, a little bit squirrely because of it, mm-hmm. of how many things were named oak.
I mean, is there, like, a rational explanation for that? Are there oak trees in the area? I haven't seen... I don't believe I've seen an oak tree.
I mean,
there somewhere.
There are a lot of oaks. Okay. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Dan said that the reason that his family chose that particular property was that there was a giant white oak in a field, and mm-hmm. that ties into, because the family were German Hexmeister, what's it called, Pennsylvania Dutch, and they practiced Pennsylvania Dutch magic, and so they always looked for, on homesteads, this white oak, because it had some significance with, like, energies and magic in the land.
Well, they're known as, like, the king of trees, like the oak king.
Right.
And also, they, for some reason, are struck by lightning particularly more than other trees are, even though many trees have, I forget what they called it, that, like, a low, some type of electronic, it's something that's actually measurable and scientific with botany that I'm going to butcher explaining right now. But there's no, like, really understandable reason why oak trees get actually struck more often in areas with trees similar height. But also, again, so that was happening. And then I will say one thing from one of our Estes sessions last night. The oak thing's significant to me, and so is this idea of a dragon for a specific reason. And we were trying to communicate with the particular thing last night. And at one point it was like, it's dragon. And then it was talking about ritual and all this other stuff. And we were like, dragon? Like, who's dragon?
Or, like, where is this coming from? It seemed like such an odd word to pick. Because, I mean, obviously, for people who are listening who aren't familiar with the Estes method for whatever reason, you're using a radio, essentially. Like, a radio that scans through AM and FM channels in very short bursts. So usually, like, a 1 to 2 second burst or less. And so you only get, like, a couple of words out of each station. A lot of it is just static. And so because you are tapping into a radio, there are certain words that you are perhaps more likely to hear. Obviously, in rural places, you get a lot of Christian radio stations, and you get, you know, so if you're getting a bunch of fire and brimstone stuff, you can logically see where that comes from. Dragon seemed like an odd word to hear on a rural Kentucky radio station, to be honest. But it came through, it was one of the, like, clearest and loudest words that came through last night.
It was like, it's dragon, when I asked, like, who is this, or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's really stuck with me since yesterday.
Yeah.
And then the fact that you now walk down here, have this oak thing that is connected to this giant dragon.
You tell us
also
about this.
That's weird.
It is really weird.
We're going to be, like, once we get home to our separate homes, I feel like we're going to be unpacking a lot of this for a while. Yeah, that's very... What a cool...
strange, right?
...series of stories, though.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at that point, like, with a lot of this stuff, you start to think, is this real? Is this even possible?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because it's like the murders, and then, like, Dan and Pan and the whole, you know, Hillier intersection, then all the Guterma stuff, then Oakwood, then, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you keep stacking these things, and you're like, all in this one place.
Very small. I mean, what is the population of Somerset?
Somerset's 12,000 people,
right. It's a small area.
Yeah, it's a very small area.
So we've been here a couple of days, and we're kind of familiar with how to get around
already.
Yeah, we
feel like we could probably, like, make our way around these streets with no GPS at this point. Like, it's not, it's not a big space.
Even when we went to go meet Dan, you gave us the address. I'm like, that's
like 3 minutes, 4 minutes from our
home. Yeah, when I realized where you guys were, I was like, oh man, they were, like, really close to Dan.
Yeah,
you know, like,
So. It's not a spread out area at all. I mean, even the Mount Victory Cave where we went yesterday.
No, see, it didn't,
like,
take very long.
30 minutes away, basically.
Yeah, and that's really just because you have to get on that one-lane road. And
it's a windy road.
You know, if it was a straight shot, it's even closer.
Give or
totally.
Take some missing time, depending on
right.
if there's a UFO
right.
flap happening or not. You might want to allot for some extra travel time.
True.
Bake it into your schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, it's been weird.
It's weird.
Well, I would love to kind of get into a little bit how all of this pursuit and engagement with the phenomena, whatever it may be, has affected your, like, regular life. Because I know for me, I've gotten kind of to a point now where it's really hard to, like, I'm in this trip right now, I'm not even going to try to explain it to people who don't understand, because it's not like a bunch of striking events have occurred that are like, wow, that's so weird. It's just a continuous stream of what the hell is happening right now, and weird stuff that I find anyway that it has impacted my personal life, and then also just my connections with people, and, you know, for better and for worse at the same time. And so I'd love to hear some of your thoughts on that, Nathan.
I mean, it's like, obviously it's significantly affected my life, you know. I guess in many ways, you know, just personally, it has sort of shifted my relationship with this place, mm-hmm. you know, to a large degree. You know, I come from Eastern Kentucky, like deep in Appalachia, and that's always felt like home, you know, but I never really planned on going back there or going back to a small town area after living in like Lexington. And being down here too, you know, once we moved here, I was just kind of like, I don't know if this is ever going to feel like home, you know. Mm-hmm. But once I really started like digging into these stories and things, like, this feels like home now. I mean, just the connection that I have to this place, and the way that sort of, I mean, just to be honest, the way that my identity now has sort of blended with this place, mm-hmm. you know, because, you know, in a way too, my storytelling is having an effect mm-hmm. on this place, right?
Yeah.
Because a lot of these things existed, but they didn't exist in a way that they were accessible mm-hmm. to everybody. Mm-hmm. And I think I've provided sort of a lens that's allowed, you know, a sort of a different scope of seeing these things, because it is it's a lot of strange stuff, you know. And so in doing that and participating in that, you know, it's exposed me and opened me up to, I think, those energies, you know, because now all kinds of strange, like, it's just the more that I've opened myself up to, the more that the strange things mm-hmm. have just happened, you know. It's just and continue to happen. We continue to find strange things, weird things come our way, and I don't know how to explain it, you know. And it's weird. It's hard to like go to work and like have a day job, you know what I mean? Because yeah. a lot of stuff I'm just like, oh, I just want to go dig into this, and you know. And so I, you know, obviously I spend a lot of my evenings doing that, but it's just, I don't know, it's there's a strangeness to it all. But more than anything, I mean, it is like a magic, you know. Mm-hmm. It's an energy that I've never really felt was negative, you know. It's not like it's good or bad for me. You know, Dan was talking about that too. It's like just a lot of like strange things, yeah. and there's something there, you know. It's something that we're engaging with, but I don't know what it is, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, but that's the mystery of it, and I think that's part of the journey, and that's the path, and that's the whole initiatory experience part of it that mm-hmm. that seems so significant. And I think that's the thing too. It does feel very initiatory. It's not like I'm seeking to be initiated into anything, but it's the path to mystery, you know. And it's just like, that's the, you know, I guess that's the thing. But there have been a lot of crazy people that, yeah. I guess I'm a little bit more guarded than I used to be, mm-hmm. and definitely with the family and trying to keep everything sort of separate, you know, mm-hmm. from yeah. this, because, you know, there are people that can't handle some of this stuff, or you know, maybe don't have the mental state to engage with some of this stuff that you mm-hmm. you know, some people are crazy, you know, and yeah. And sometimes not even crazy, but they're more reckless and more dangerous with these things, and so they can do a lot more harm and cause a lot more collateral damage, you know, I think, yeah. psychically, you know,
yeah.
That I feel like I have to be very careful about, because some people just come down here and they, and people I know that live here, they just want to engage with it in a very bravado way, because mm-hmm. they think it's cool, and they're not taking it seriously for what it is. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Do you find that that's happened a lot? I know we talked about this the other night, but just for the recording, have you found that there are a lot of people rolling in all the time who have either, like, yeah. watched Hellier or listened to yeah. Penny Royal?
Yeah, there's quite a lot, you know. That's what Amy was joking. She was like, the tourism department should you
know, something. Get on this.
You know? Yeah. I mean, Kyle Cadell, who runs the Paranormal Museum, is really the litmus test for that because, mm-hmm. I mean, he says it's a constant flow of people that come through and they've seen Hellier, you know, or they've listened to the podcast. One of my friends runs a health food store, like a green market, and he texted me and he was like, hey, dude, there's some people here in town at the market, and one's from Alaska, and he was like, I just asked them why they were here in Somerset, and he said, because they listened to your podcast, and they wanted to come down here and experience Somerset. Wow. And I was like, and he was like, I knew you did the podcast, but I was like, what the fuck? And I was like, yeah. I don't know, man. And so, but, you know, definitely because of the studios at Jarfly, a lot of people come there, and you know, there's a lot of times I'm like standing at the bar and someone's like, Nathan? You know? I'm like, yes, you know. And so we've had some weird experiences. Darian loves all of that, you know. He loves the surprise sort of like, oh my god, here's another person, you know.
Yeah, I was gonna say, because I feel like that would be an interesting experience. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily positive or negative, but I can't imagine being that visible, I guess. Like, you've not only have you made Somerset like this little beacon by putting your lens on it and publicizing it, but you've made yourself this little beacon, which I think for me would be unsettling.
At times I've been like, is this too much exposure, you know, publicly? But, you know, I mean, I love telling stories, you know, I love recounting all this stuff. I love researching all these things. I can't believe that I like ended up in a place that's such a treasure trove. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there's so much other stuff that I just found out that I hadn't told you guys about. I'm not gonna tell you right now, just because it'll take up too much time. But in a minute, I may tell you guys. But it is just, I just keep finding stuff that is unbelievable in the sense that it's like, you know, Darian found out that LSD. The guy that distributed most of the LSD in the United States, he's like the Johnny Appleseed of LSD, it all connects back to Somerset, Kentucky, right? And I was like, what? And he had this whole revelatory moment. And I remember that day he was texting, he's like, okay, when you get off work, you've got to come out of the house. And, show this, you know? And it is a crazy series of events that ties Somerset into this, and like the rise of Jerry Garcia, and like this crazy thing, and it's like it does loop back to Somerset. And
how weird.
And I was telling a friend that has another podcast about this. They have all these connections to the conspiracy community, and I'd found something. I was like, hey, I need access to this specific guy. And you guys have talked to him. Can you help me out? And so they did. They hooked me up with him to confirm whether or not what I found was true, and. I was like, I can't tell you guys right now what it is, you know, it's too much, but we'll hop on here. And they always give me shit because he's like, because everything in the world just circles back to Somerset, right, man? Every time I talk to you, you've got some story, you know. But it's another weird thing, and it ties into all the stuff. And it's like, how could all of these stories be here? But that's the whole thing I was talking to you guys about when we were doing the interview, and some of the questions that I had sent you, mm-hmm. you know, for the second season. This idea of like crossroads, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, is it because Somerset became this sort of crossroads with the railroad and all these things early on, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's just been this flow of people and things, this concentration here.
Yeah, like a point of convergence.
And somehow that has affected the place, you know, both in just a very mm-hmm. real sense, but also sort of in a psychic sense.
Yeah, that ties into the idea of initiation, that you have to pass through something. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I mean, I'm happy that we're here. And again, it's like neither of us were expecting at any point like to have some grandiose anything, I think. It was much more of just the weirdness.
We were joking on the plane, because again, I mean, the way that we like wound up here at the time that
we blew in from very different parts of the United States and somehow ended up on the same connecting flight from North Carolina to Lexington.
Yeah, it was just, so we kind of like met at the crossroads of our trip to get here, but we were joking on the plane. We knew it would be kind of weird when we got here. Actually, we had asked Dana Newkirk, like, just if she had any, like, general tips about being in rural Kentucky, because, like, neither of us had been. We were like, anything that you think that we should know. Mostly she was like, bring bug spray. It's good advice. But she was like, it's super weird. Like, just be aware that it's very deeply weird. And we were like, yeah, okay, like, we're expecting that. We joked on the plane. We were like, nothing's going to happen. We're just going to go and it's going to be totally normal. And, yeah, like, yeah, nothing weird will happen at all. And as Mena was saying, like, there hasn't been, I don't think, like, it's not like we had this big, profound experience, like we saw a UFO, or, you know, we got abducted by goblin people.
As far as we know, because we have a couple days left.
I mean, yeah, I was about to say, I'm not,
tonight is when all the crazy shit will go down. But it's just, like, literally, we've been exhausted. Like, last night we got home from the mine, and we were just, like, bodily, like, fatigued from the sheer amount of, like, minute-to-minute low-key weirdness that's just been sort of assaulting us pretty much since we got off the plane. And that's an odd experience. I mean, I'm someone who, we both, I think, are people who, like, have a lot of weirdness in our day-to-day lives. You know, like, I work literally full-time as a, as, like, a witch and spiritual person and reader. So, like, my everyday life is talking to clients who are like, I have the spirit attached to me. And so it takes, like, a certain concentration of weirdness for me to be like, this has been a lot, actually.
Yeah.
But it has.
Yeah. And weird, subtle physical manifestations of weird. Like the dog. The black dog. Sure, it's someone's dog, most likely. But that symbolically is weird. And then the turtle. Haunted cave road. We had a candle burn. We're both people who do this type of stuff. Candles burning weird. We're used to it. But this was, we had a candle very, very weird.
This candle that we burned the first night that we were here sort of out of nowhere started burning very strangely. And I was taking photos? That's not a word. photos of it, like still shots in quick succession, because sometimes when you go back and look, if you're doing candle divination, you can see interesting stuff in the flame. And there's one shot on my phone, and I showed it to Nathan the other night, where the candle flame has split into two, and it's like shooting a little fireball up in the air.
That's so weird. Like that. It was really weird, you know. That is strange, you know.
What, like, is that? And I showed it to a couple of my my practitioner friends, and all of them were like, "The fuck?
What's bizarre. What's going on here?" I mean, it is bizarre.
And so, and even like the stray kitten in the warehouse next door to our Airbnb.
There's been an animal rescue subplot this whole time.
Which is very in keeping for me. Like, there's this joke in, like, my friendship circle that, like, stray cats just find me.
Oh, really?
New Orleans has a lot of stray cats. Yeah. But, like, our yard has just become, like, a crossroads of specifically stray cats. Like, we'll rehome one, and then 2 days later, a new one will have showed up. And it's just been, like, I'm just, like, a weird suburban Louisiana Snow White. Like, we've got, like, four opossums and, like, a raccoon and revolving costume.
Francine the possum.
The pit possum.
Yeah, well, kind of. Yeah. I mean, she was sleeping in the cat bed on the porch the other day. I went out to, like, get the mail, and I was like, holy shit, this possum is just, like, curled up in the cat bed. Very weird. But I was kind of feeling good about coming here, because as much as I love my animals, it's been a little stressful. We've had foster kittens in the bathroom at home, and so I was like, it's gonna be nice actually to like be in a pet-free space for a few days and just like not worry about this like cat screaming all the time. And like the first night we were here, out of nowhere we hear this like meow. And we're like, are we
behind the electric fireplace?
Is that really where you guys heard it?
And it was after we got off. Well, we heard the first meow while we were on the phone with you.
Yeah.
And we had just started something that involved, like, in the first hour, there will be a cat. But we hadn't read that part yet. So we heard the meow. And then.
But we kind of thought maybe we had just misheard it was a bird or something. Mm-hmm. We were on the phone to you, so it was background noise. And then,
we finished it.
Yeah, we're going through the spell. This reading, this recitation, this line in the spell is, in the first hour you will take the form of a cat, and right at that time we hear this meow again, and we're like, oh, okay, now there is something.
My first thought though was I went to the most extreme possible answers. It is a trick. There is an entity in the garage
Something's
that wants us to come
you.
Outside because we did all this protective work, and now it can't get in.
And it wants us to, we like, we're really like in this like ritual space, you know, which does change your headspace a little bit. And so we were like, should we not But then, you know, my animal lover side took over. I was like, I have to go see if there's a cat. So we walk into the warehouse next door, which the door should not even have been open. It should have been locked, but for some reason it wasn't. And there's this, like, little gray kitten skittering across the floor of this warehouse. And the last 3 days have been me communicating with the Airbnb owner, being like, let's game plan this. So last night, it was successfully trapped. And now the Airbnb owners have a new cat. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Well done.
It is weird, too. Like, when you opened up that door back there, I was like, it does feel like behind...
Yeah, behind the scenes, weirdly.
Behind stage, mm-hmm. You're like, what?
Yeah, it is. We were joking that this place feels like a Big Brother house almost, you know?
The box thing, too, is really weird.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Wait, what?
The Amazon boxes.
Oh, the Amazon boxes, yeah.
Yeah, we were leaving to go a couple of days ago to go do a working where one of the ways you can tell if it's been successful is you will receive essentially two gifts. And what that means is you'll find two things out of in a place they shouldn't be, you know, like just weird timing. I think that was the parameters of it. And again, we're in a place that's kind of known for weird time bendy, retro causality, strange stuff. So we're leaving the house to go do this. And as we're opening the door to go get in the car, there's two random Amazon packages on the porch of our Airbnb. Which
like it's weird because this Airbnb is brand new. Like, I think it's only been like in operation for a month, and the owners of the Airbnb live like across the street. So you would think that if they had packages that were for the house here, they would just send them to their house rather mm-hmm. than send them to the Airbnb. So yeah, we see these packages. We're like, that's two gifts where they shouldn't be.
Yeah, at a weird time.
At a weird time, and then we go and do this working, which, yeah, it does feel time bendy. There's been a lot of that going on.
And when I saw them, like, the first thing that did pop in my head was like, oh, this is already the result from what we're about to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really weird. I mean, when you guys tell me that, I was like, wow, that's really fucking strange, you know? Something I haven't looked into yet, which I just interviewed David Metcalf, who's a great researcher. I was telling you guys about it, talking to him. He... said that, is it the University of Georgia? There's a guy down there who is researching time loops. It's not Eric Wargo, but it's somebody else. Maybe it was Wargo, but it might have been another guy. But they actually have a paranormal department. You know, it's one of these weird universities that has a group of researchers. I don't know if they're officially calling themselves that, but like a lot of stuff in the psychic stuff. And so he was telling me you need to check out some of their research papers and what the things they're doing, talk to some of those people. And he said one of the guys is researching this overlap between people experiencing time loops and retrocausality in areas where the geomagnetic energies are off the charts. Mm-hmm. You know, and so as I was describing everything to him and telling him, you know, stuff with the bait cabal and all these things, mm-hmm. he was like, dude, this is all time loops, you yeah. know, and there is an like you guys have had all these sort of reflective,
yeah, these
sort
doubling
of things,
mirroring doubling. Kind of experiences,
yeah, and I feel like a lot of things here are like that, you know, like when the podcast came out 2 weeks later, all of those strange signs appeared mm-hmm. here in town where people were posting, you know, we don't know who they were, you know, seemed like it might be some transient people, but the things they were saying were the podcast, you know. I mean they're mentioning the people in the podcast, you know, they're mentioning, you know, Lester Burns Jr., Sammy Catron, this town is a cult, you know, that's what all the signs said.
Whoa.
This town is a cult, call the FBI, Truman, it's the Truman Show, none of this is real.
Wow.
And like weird stuff like that, mm-hmm. and then like things from the podcast, and everyone kept asking me, you know, what do you, these people must have listened to the podcast,
right.
And I was like, I don't think they did,
right,
you know, I did, and the cops are telling us, oh no, we've arrested that guy, he's crazy, you know, he thinks that there's somebody pushing a shopping cart underneath the town with microwaves in it, and that's what's affecting people's brains, you know, he tells us that all the time, and I'm like, well, for one thing, it's weird that he knows that there are tunnels underneath the town, you know, and like, mm-hmm. but, you know, seven of those signs pop up, and then you know, on buildings and in the middle of town, And then finally they paint the top of the roof of a house as you're driving in, and you know it's gone, they tore mm-hmm. it down, but this town is a cult, you know. Whoa. The cops are involved, you know, call the FBI, the cyber terrorists have taken over our minds, like all this weird stuff. And I was like, it had a weird mirroring of, because I don't think they had any idea, but the timing of it's like, because of the sort of energy here and the state of what it is, it's like when you put something out, it tends to sort of like bounce back, or you know, create these patterns that are noticeable, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think, just for some reason, just as a natural feature of this place, I think that's a thing, you know. And that adds to sort of the weirdness of it. What is that? I don't know.
I mean, it must. Do you think that you would you say that there is like a normal 9-to-5 Nathan, and then like a weird Kentucky anomaly Nathan? Because it kind of just feels like you are 24/7.
No, yeah,
in the anomaly.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I mean, even at work, I mean, I'm still, yeah. I'm like, you know, shit's happening. You know, the father of the boy that it was the Linda and Cody that were murdered. Cody's last name is Garrett, and his father had been coming in to a weekly to where I work and was one of the customers, and I'd never connected it until someone told me who the father was, and I was like, I have to talk to that guy every week, you know. And it's just so weird, and I found the backstory out about that too. It was just so sad, but it was like, it's just like so much of it just it's just goes it's just it's going on all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioning like you doing this like full time,
yeah.
I can't imagine. I wonder if I would like if I could handle it if I had all day to.
It's weird. It's weird. I think I'm fortunate in that I have a partner who is like very not into any of this, like, and not like aggressively opposed, just like not their speed. They don't really care. They're pretty tuned out. Which has its pros and cons, but a pro is that if I need to just totally switch off and have someone to like me back into like normal life, we can just go hang out and like sit down and talk, and it's like it's almost a little bit like shutting the door, but it's picked up over the past like 18 months. Like I would say about 18 months ago, give or take, was probably when I watched Hellier, and not too long after I had started watching season one of Hellier, I by chance happened to be in the foothills of the Ozarks in rural Arkansas. I went on a trip with my friend, and my friend was going back to a town where she had vacationed a lot with her family when she was younger. She just kind of invited me along at the last minute, so I had no idea about any of this. I'm a little ways into the first season of Hellier, and day two of our trip there, we wind up in an abandoned mining town called Rush, Arkansas, and we're hiking up into the into the hills, and we're like, oh, there's a bunch of abandoned mine shafts, and there's quartz running all through those hills, and we like went up to the like this boarded off mine, and there was one particular entrance where the air coming out of the mine was like 20 to 30 degrees colder than the rest of the, like, you could feel when you crossed the threshold of this air coming out of this mine, and we were like, what would do that? I don't know. And that was, you know, a month, 2 months before the pandemic, and this entire stretch of time, my already weird life has gotten so much aggressively more weird in that time. And I don't think there is any, like, going back. I don't think I could, like, it's fundamentally changed who I am as a person. And I feel like that does change how you can integrate into sort of, like, a totally normal world. I mean, I just I don't know, it can be almost a little bit isolating sometimes, I think, which makes conversations like this very lovely.
I do feel like there's an intensification in the community. Mm-hmm. No, well, not even just the paranormal community, but whatever this community is, you know.
Whatever
I'm
it is, I like,
but,
that, because it's weird.
But, you know, because people are like, oh, you know, it's like UFO Twitter, or, you know, witch talk, or what, you know what I'm saying? Like, people call whatever the
right.
things are, the Bigfoot groups
right.
and stuff
but
like that.
But this is a different little bubble for sure.
Yeah, and it doesn't, because it is weird. It's almost ineffable. You know, it's hard to put words on a lot of this stuff. And like you're talking about with the small things that just sort of add up to make the things weird. And it's like, but you're aware of it. You know, you're seeing those things. And I feel like this community has grown up around that. It mm-hmm. incorporates so many aspects of all the other things, you know, whether it's UFOs or Bigfoot or whatever, you know, and I don't know. So far, it seems like a pretty good community.
I agree.
At least a supportive community.
Mm-hmm. I think we were talking about it the other night, right, as like a vortex almost. Like, so there's this little, there's a center of some kind, and it's spiraling and sucking these different people in and pulling these threads together. I think the only thing that is disconcerting to me sometimes is that I like the mystery and I like the adventure. And I think in many ways that's why I'm plugged into all of this. I don't think I have a goal. I know a lot of magicians, you know, who have like goals and they want to be rich or they want to
do this. I have no goals for anything.
Yeah, I'm just like, where are we going? Like, that's the goal, you know, is like, ooh, discovery.
Haunted Cave Road, okay.
Yeah, let's get chased by a scary dog. But I do sometimes get freaked out about what is pulling the strings.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that sometimes I find disconcerting. Like, what is the end goal of whatever intelligence is behind this? Does it have an end goal?
Right, right.
Is it, you know, is it a scary end goal? Does it matter, you know? But I think these are wider philosophical questions of, like, why am I here? What am I doing?
Yeah, yeah.
I think, too, it's like, what is the retrocausality? What have I already experienced in my life that is a result of this very strange endeavor? Like, things from my childhood or whatever that, I mean, I cannot think of anything that I have wondered if it's connected personally before, but it does make me question, because why would I, if retrocausality is a thing, why would I only see it now as opposed to decades of my life before?
Right.
Yeah.
But that's something that Darian keeps pointing out, because there are all of these instances in our past that seem to be part of this, you know, like books and events and things that I said to him, but in order for that to be true, that would mean that something would have had to have been, had started this a long time ago, but then also actively managed it, right?
Yeah.
And, but I find that, you know, for one thing, it can't be human, because the humans are just too messy. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's just no way.
Yeah.
But it's like, but that seems too... That doesn't seem like it either, you know? And it's like, is it us somehow affecting the past? Or is it just a feature of reality that we don't understand yet? Or is it that whatever this is, it is like a, you know, I've said this before, that's like a radiation, you know? And so, like, you're irradiated by it. And you can even irradiate other people.
Yeah.
You know, because once you're sort of radioactive, you know, if someone spends time with you and you're talking with this, then suddenly they might not even, you know, experience this, but through you they've sort of become irradiated by it, and then they start to have synchronicity.
Yeah, it's like
things.
A virality almost, or like mimetics in a strange way.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, there have been a lot of weird things, and like Darian's had some weird stuff that's like, well, it has to be connected to this, you know, and I have too. And it's like, it's odd. It's like it was a primer for something that was going to happen, you know, but I don't know. I mean, it's strange. I do worry about the idea of what is it? Could it be something nefarious or something malign that's pulling the strings? You know, thus far it hasn't felt negative,
right?
You know? But some of it seems like where is this going? Because it can't go to a positive place. It's not like we're gonna uncover something and it's gonna, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't,
but I, and then I think also, like, I agree with you, and that's my concern, but it's also like, what would a goal outcome even look like for an entity or a being or an energy that was controlling all of this? Like, it's so unknowable. What if something is big enough and omnipotent and omniscient enough to be pulling all these strings and affecting all this stuff? What would it even want?
The
goal even be?
Right.
And the best thing that I've been able to come up with is, like, there is this, I think, egregore tulpa part of all this going on, and I feel like perhaps, like, an end goal is just to self-generate, you know, to feed, in a sense, to, like, grow larger.
Yeah.
You know, American Gods by Neil Gaiman covers this so well. It's this idea of like
these
things that don't have a physical form need you to believe in them and talk about them and tell stories about them to survive. And if you're making a podcast that's sort of like transmitting out to all these people who are then telling their friends and having their own experiences and coming here and feeling and experiencing weird things, then if there is like an egregore of Somerset, then the egregore gets stronger.
That's what I think, is that there is a some type of, and that's why I would call it an information structure, you know, or whatever, but that there is something, a structure of some sort, and then when you feed into it, you know, it's the feedback loop thing, right? It doesn't even have to be paranormal. I mean, this could just be a cybernetic system of sorts, you know, that ties all of this stuff together. And I mean, look at Hellier, right? Definitely, once they put this out, the whole like blue balloon thing, and you know, you could see it spread even in terms of memetics,
totally. Right?
And that's fascinating. Like, someone should study that, because just in terms of how that community grew and has affected people, and people are seeing things and then feeding back into it.
Absolutely. Right?
And I think Pennyworld, to an extent, has done that, you know, in a different way, you know. Same thing, though, you know, it really overlaps a lot, too, but yeah, it's like, you know, what, to what end?
Right.
You know, and once these things do exist, they do have to, they need sustaining belief, you know.
But
people talk about this all the time, too, on a smaller scale, the idea of, like, addictions, and where it's like the attachment really is the addiction that you've created, right? And so then it, once it exists, is this thing that you're thinking about, like alcohol, all the time, right? And so then for you, there's this like tulpic entity, and then if you try to stop thinking about it, it wants you to think about it, because it will die now that it has an existence. But I'm just using that as an example.
No,
but
it makes sense.
But I've definitely like read and listened to some podcasts and stuff about forms of magic and forms of systems that see things this way, where when people are doing healings on people, they approach it from that sense where it's like, you've created this thing and you're feeding it, and now we have to, you know, sort of get rid of it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that it's not like a demon that was hopping around and like sees you and jump. I mean, but that's a whole other system too.
Right.
People believe those things too.
In some ways, that's just like another lens to look at basically the same phenomenon that you're describing. Manna, I want to know how it's changed your life.
Oh, well, I mean, I can think back to, because for me, to where I'm sitting right now in Somerset, Kentucky, talking to both of you, having a podcast, all this type of stuff is like, the first time, and this is again funny because you mentioned my friend Ryan a couple nights ago. So I've known him for many years now, and he was kind of the first person that I'd ever met in kind of the internet paranormal investigation world that's not just like trying to pinpoint themselves to like one thing of like ghost hunter or UFO hunter or things like that. It was a lot more of just a general curiousness, which is what I really resonated with. And he posted on his Instagram story that he was like, wow, like there's this docu series called Hellier. And I was living in England at the time. I didn't have any like personal connections with any people in these communities. I was very much a fly on the wall. I was very into all this stuff, but I never talked to anyone about it. So I watched it the whole season in like one night, and I was like, wow, that was amazing. Like, I don't watch a lot of ghost TV, but this is, it seems very special. And then I kind of went on with the rest of my life and everything, although it really affected me in like a positive way. And then I had a bunch of like personal, really intense experiences. Like, I had a near-death experience that following month, and I had a lot of very significant spiritual encounters through travel, and then really intense life-altering medical things, all in a very short, like, eight-month span. And then a couple of months of really greatness in my life, and then the pandemic hit, essentially. And since then, I've been a part of a couple different communities, but that is essentially the pinpoint that I can think of my friend sharing that podcast that has thrown me through this weird loop of meeting people who understand all of this lens a lot more. And it's the more I think about it, the weirder and weirder and weirder that gets, because that kind of just changed the course of my life. And even if I go back further from that, like how I met that person was weird, and how I even found podcasts a couple of years ago in the first place, because that podcasting has been like a huge point for me. Mm. And so now, even the past year and a half of the pandemicness, it's like the people that I kind of knew in my regular life, I'm still close to, but I can't explain a lot of what I'm interested in anymore, or how it's affected me or my beliefs or general curiousness, just because it doesn't make sense. And I still love these people, but it has definitely affected me in terms of what I do look for in new friends and people. And I think I just pay a lot more attention to reality as well, like subtle little things. And I don't have as much of an expectation for grand spiritual experiences anymore in general, because I think I just appreciate the subtleness of a lot of things and find a lot of magic in that. But at the same time, it's like we're on this path. And you talk about paths a lot in season two, and even though that hasn't come out yet, but that's like a theme. And I really do feel like I'm someone who's just on a path. And when I do turn around, it looks a lot different to me than it did as I was walking through it. And that's the part that I get disconcerted about sometimes. It's like, wow, that was all so... It became so much of a narrative. Like, it really does feel like you're kind of questing through things. And sometimes I think it's not even disconcerting as in, like, I feel dangerous. To me, it's so far outside of what we are taught that we can experience our lives as. Like, if someone were to hear who doesn't understand a lot of, like, the whimsy of pursuing things just because it feels right, that's like a fantasy land, right? Mm-hmm. That's like, you're wasting your time, blah, 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 all these things. And the fact, you know, coming out to not have a huge game plan of what you want to do and just experience a place and meet some people you met off the internet, to record for, like, your podcast, for, like, me to, and that's what I think a lot of people would perceive it as. But for us, it's like, no, like, these have impacts on people. These are, like, aspects of, like, this has become part of my job, you know? Like, technically, Celeste and I are going to, this is a tax write-off.
It is a tax write-off. Hey! <Right. laughs> Love that. Thank you, IRS.
Yes. And then you started, like, Pennyroyal as, like, you're genuinely interested in it. And I'm sure there was lots of pushback from, like, random people of, like, why the fuck do you care? Right, yeah, like, right, why are you, like, yeah, why you care so much about this? And then it expands and connects people and becomes, I feel like, season two, from what you've shared and the types of questions that you sent us, like, season one really felt like it started off like you had an idea of, like, oh, yeah, it's, like, about Pennyroyal, this area specifically. And then as you go on, it's like, whoa, like, this has completely transcended that. And then now what it sounds like for season two, it's like, no, well, how do we keep going with this interesting cybernetics lens, which you don't hear people talk about that. Like, you're the only person I know that can tell me about cybernetics. And then, like, you're not scared to, like, connect it with the paranormal and magic. And you do it in a way, and even, like, with the question you asked and the conversations that we were having in recording for it, you're not trying to take away from anything either. Like, you're not trying to make something less magical or less weird and paranormal. It's like, no, but, like, look at all these different systems that people have created to organize the same weird information structures over time, over through different cultures, through different groups of people. And I think that's amazing because, you know, you're seeing a lot more now people talk about paranormal and magic and occult and, like, religion and spiritualism, but you're like, how can we add tech and not make it scary for people to, like, oh, you're trying to, like, detract from it? Like, no, like, let's just look at it all for how interesting of a thing that is. But there's still people that's like, why do you care? Right. Like, that's one thing that I think I'm just so much more, I just care so much less, I guess, about what people think. I mean, not that it doesn't affect me, but I think I'm much more confident in doing things because I want to than I was before all of this stuff. And it seems like the way you guys are both reacting, that seems to be a similar sentiment.
No, totally. I think, you know, to drop our experience yesterday. That's what I loved about visiting Dan Dutton in Dandyland mm-hmm. yesterday, is I sang to Manna in the car on the way. I've been talking like nonstop about Dan Dutton since we went yes. there, by the way. I've said to Manna numerous
times. We looked
times,
up his music on YouTube.
Okay. I was like, videos. I'm in love with Dan Dutton. I'm sorry.
You should have shirts, Penny Royal.
Yeah, you really should.
I'd die for Dan Dutton.
I would buy one. But, you know, there's something about going out there to that space and meeting this person who is just so aligned with what he is supposed to be doing. Like, I'm not a Thelemite, and I'm not a big like Aleister Crowley fan necessarily, but I do think there's something in that idea of true will. And if any of that is real, right? Dan Dutton is a person who found his true will and is living in accordance with it, and it radiates from him, and it radiates from that space. And I think like the three of us, and perhaps other people who are plugged into this particular current, I think there is something we share. There's a commonality where we are people who are interested in that concept of following that, you know, deepest, truest internal path, I guess, and to find that and to walk it and to not give a fuck what anybody else really has to say about it about it.
Right.
That's very beautiful.
Just, I mean, exactly what you're saying too about the path, and that it's a narrative, mm-hmm. you know, because in a sense, like, you know, reality is composed of the stories that you tell yourself,
mm-hmm.
but people forget that that's what's happening. You know, people get so mixed up into their daily lives, they, you know, just work and everything, that they mm-hmm. forget that really you're just telling yourself a story over and over again,
mm-hmm.
and that's what's, you know, what is real to you. And so it's like yeah. when you become aware of sort of those narratives, and you engage with those narratives, and then you can, you know, edit those narratives
yeah.
and change those narratives, it changes mm-hmm. your reality, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think Dan early on realized that he could create whatever world he wanted to create, you mm-hmm. know. And you know, and Dan, it's funny because it's like he'll have these experiences. He's been having a lot of experiences lately, and that's the thing too, is like when he and I met, he didn't think of any of this stuff as paranormal, right? And then the more that, you know, that we've spent time together over the last few years, you know, he's like, damn it, you've infected me with this whole, like, thing, you know, where now he's like, I never thought of any of this stuff as strange. And it's like, it's not strange, but, you know, it's still, it is out of mm-hmm. the ordinary, you know? And it's like, but he never questions anything,
right.
you know? And when he tells you things, it's like, is he being serious? Does he believe what he's telling? Because sometimes he'll tell me things and it's like, well, that's fucking crazy, you know?
Right.
In a wonderful way, you know, right. in this beautiful way, but it's like, does he really believe that? Or But what you realize is that it doesn't matter whether he believes it or whether I believe it, mm-hmm. but that we're both open to the possibility of
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Right? And so you live in that sort of space where you're constantly creating
Yeah,
and telling these new stories.
Navigating you know. This liminal space. I think what I loved most about talking to Dan is, like, I do a lot of work in the dream space. That's, like, a big part of what I do as a practitioner. And just, I mean, it's been part of my personal practice since I was very, very little. I've always been able to lucid dream. And even people who are interested in dreams and who don't just write them off as, like, mm-hmm. mental trash, you know, it's rare to meet somebody who, like, agrees with you that you are going to a place.
Mm-hmm.
And in just completely casual conversation with Dan yesterday, he said something that was like, oh, you know, yeah, like, going to that other place. And I was like, yes, thank you. Oh, my God. Because I just don't meet people who understand it the way I understand it. And that, for me, that was incredibly moving. Like, I had, like, a bit of a moment where I was just like, oh, okay, somebody else yeah. understands.
Yeah.
I think what's interesting too, and I think I brought this up when we were driving away from Dandyland, but the way that these little mirroring moments of weirdness and strangeness have been happening, like such as an example of the Haunted Cave Road, and then we had a whole Alice in Wonderland thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost so weird. As if things are written like an experiential poem. Like there's a theme that'll start off like us doing bibliomancy in an Alice in Wonderland book we bought at a, what are they called?
A thrift store
the day before coming out, and then to divine something that we would find there, and then to have a weird experience with that while there, and then have one of the last things Dan say about how he's suddenly interested in something from Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, it was. That was.
It was very weird.
Because we were kind of testing the phenomenon, like because everything here had been so strange.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to set up like a little reality test to see, like, okay, we've had all this mirroring, but it could just be coincidence. So let's do this bibliomancy with this book that we just acquired in Somerset, and let's see. If when we're at Dan Dutton's, which is a place that we've never been to before and don't know what it looks like, let's see if what we found in this passage from Alice in Wonderland presents itself in his house. And the passage was about a fireplace. So we turn up at Dan's house, and he's walking us around, like, all the studios and stuff, and we walk into, like, essentially his living room, and there is a fireplace. And I pointed out to Manna, like, subtly, but we don't, like, mention it. And then Dan just, like, organically launches into this long and involved story about the fireplace, because it's a specifically significant fireplace, because it came from the house of, like, a local witch. And Manna and I just standing there, like, what the fuck? But there was still part of us, I think, that was like, maybe this is still just a coincidence. I mean, it's a house in the woods, and, of course, there's a fireplace and, like, whatever. So, like, there's that seed of doubt always. And then as we're leaving, he just brings up House in Wonderland out of absolutely nowhere. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Then we're like, yeah. Oh, okay, that's it. Yeah. That's the confirmation.
Mm-hmm. It was like the phenomenon was like, okay, idiots, you didn't think that was right. Well, let me point it out for
let
you.
Let me smack you upside the head with it. And it was so weird that we like had to tell Dan. And I think we probably just like babbled in an incoherent fashion at him about that. I'm not sure that. But
I'm sure he was like, oh, of course. Of course.
Yes, naturally that would happen.
500 pieces about Alice in Wonderland because these strange people came.
Right. And then he made that crack because when we turned up, Dan's preparing for this art exhibition that he has, I think, in the next Monday, I think.
Tomorrow. It has to be finished tomorrow and then Thursday's the opening.
Right. So. I wish we were here for that. But he was painting these like flowers essentially when we came upon him in the studio, and he made this little crack like, oh, I guess I was like painting the roses red, kind of like,
yeah,
like the card soldiers. And I was like, all right, this is fucking weird.
Like, yeah, because Amy even said, you know, my wife was like, that was the first thing she thought of when she walked in and saw him painting was,
yeah,
Alice in Wonderland, you know.
Yeah. So there's this like weird little,
yeah,
yeah.
Oh, anyway.
Well, I think I'm going to pull it to a close, because I would love to throw Nathan into an essay session before he has to go.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, thank you both for being here. Thank you, Nathan, for allowing us into your wonderful vortex you've cultivated. If you guys want to go ahead and plug your stuff, I'll link everything in the description, though.
Oh, yeah, you plug away
me
first.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you guys for, like, coming down here and spending the weekend. It's been so fun, you know what I mean?
So,
and like, obviously we talked and stuff, mm-hmm, and it's just cool to actually like get to be,
yeah,
together in person, which is totally, you know what,
yeah,
I mean?
You're
like,
real.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh, you're not just an at on Twitter and Instagram. Yeah.
Also, you know, for me, it's like really nice to have, you know, like, you guys are very much a part of this and in this, you know, and are interacting with the, mm-hmm, the phenomena. And it's cool to have you guys here in this space, in this place,
mm-hmm,
and experiencing it, you know, this in particular directly, and like actually seeing it, you know what,
mm-hmm,
I mean?
Yeah.
And so, because I do, I mean, cheesy, but I do get lonely sometimes down here. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
you know, it's like, you know, I have Derry and Kyle, but you know, they know, you know what,
mm-hmm,
I mean? It's
right.
Like, you tell people this stuff, and it's like, all right, dude, you know what,
right,
I mean? They're like, oh, that sounds fucking crazy, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, or do people believe it? Do they not believe it? You know, like, just kind of experience it, you know? But it's just great having, you know, people who,
mm-hmm,
know and understand,
mm-hmm,
it to be here, you know? But,
yeah,
yeah, so season two, the plan currently is September the 21st.
Okay.
I might kick it to November just because I'm, you know, I'm interviewing so many wonderful people, you guys, and
yeah, what you've said, I'm excited for this lineup.
There's,
yeah,
a lot of people,
same,
you know, there's a lot of people, and the editor, the guy that's been doing it for me, because if I were to try to do these episodes, they'd be 3 hours long.
Oh,
you know?
Totally.
And so a lot of times I put it all together, you know, I have my the way that I've woven the story together with all the different interviews, and then I just hand it off to him because he listens to thousands of podcasts. He's just a podcast guy. And he's a musician, and he edits and masters.
Mm-hmm.
So he just, like, cuts it down from 3 hours to 55 minutes. And then
good
I'm like,
job,
I'm like, oh, but what, you know, but, you know, but there's so much in there that's like, he's like, you don't need to tell that, you know, like,
right.
You know that, you feel like it's significant, but really cut that out, you know, yeah, like, put right. that in the extra stuff, so.
You're gonna have to will someone eventually, like, in your will, it's like Pennyroyal uncut, oh, and it's like oh, eight, totally. 80 hours long.
There's so much stuff.
Yeah, the director's cut.
And I'm doing, so I've got the Patreon, Liminal Lodge, mm-hmm. and so I've been releasing a lot of the extra audio that I cut from the first season
oh,
as
cool.
extended audio, and so second season I'm gonna have even more, and probably we'll do release the full interviews with people.
Oh,
you know?
Neat!
You know,
yeah.
a lot of it, you know, there's conversations, mm-hmm. you know, more than it's like an interview.
I had so much
know?
Fun.
Yeah, it was a blast.
You guys. Yeah, and it's fun. And also being able to do that in person. You
yeah,
know, COVID really has like changed things, and plus people are just far away. It's hard mm-hmm. to be like, hey. You know, I have this crazy thing. Could you
come
down
yeah.
here and like let me record you? You know, so. But yeah, the Patreon is available if anybody wants to dig deeper into you know a lot of the research for the second season. A lot of the stuff I do an article every week, a research article, and then extended audio, and then we have a live stream every week.
Ooh,
so
oh, wow.
so yeah. everybody's kind yeah. of like in that group. You know, we've got about 100 people, a little over 100 that are in there that. That are really into researching this stuff. So, mm-hmm. like, anytime I, you know, a lot of the stuff too. It's there, the documents and the things we're researching. It's too much for one person to go through. So mm-hmm. it's great, like having a group of people who
yeah,
are like
you've got like a team.
Yeah. yeah. Right. So that's been great. So if anybody's interested in that, you know, the Patreon. If you look up Pennyroyal Podcast or Liminal Lodge, they'll find that. And then the second season shooting for September 21st, but I might. I don't want to rush it. The first season I felt like I had to get done by the date that I set because you know no one knew what it was and it like needed to come mm-hmm. out, you know, and it was crunched, you know, it was like oh gotta get this done, you know, but the second season I really want, there's just so much good stuff and I think it's such an important story to tell too mm-hmm. about kind of where it's gone, and I really wanted to take the time with it to really tell it the way it needs to be told.
Cool.
So, yeah.
I am on the internet. I never know what to say. I also have a Patreon, which is a delightful mishmash of all sorts of weird things. It's patreon.com/tarotbyceleste because I can't change the URL. It's misleading. It's not just tarot. It's all sorts of nonsense in there. Little essays on folklore and magic and witchcraft. We have a book club
which we will be doing tonight live in front of this
doing
fireplace.
Tonight in like an hour. This month's book is Josephine McCarthy's The Exorcist Handbook. We've also read Apocalyptic Witchcraft by Peter Gray, We've the Liminal by Laura Tempest Zakharoff. I can never pronounce her last name. I'm sorry, Laura. But yeah, it's really fun. We have a Discord server. It's a great group. So the Patreon's fun. Sign up for as little as $2 a month. It's not a lot of money. Consider it. And then I'm also on Instagram. That's my major platform. It's at Celeste Mott and CelesteMott.com if you want to book a session. I do readings of all kinds and occult consultation, spiritual consultation about any weirdness that you might be experiencing. This is a judgment-free space. Come at me with your super weird stories. I guarantee I will not find it all that weird. And we can talk about it. And maybe you'll feel better. And maybe you won't. I don't know, but I'll try. And yeah, I guess that's it. That's what I'm doing. Is there anything else? I don't think I do anything else, do I? I don't know. I write poems. You can read those if you want. Those are... all my writing is actually on a totally different website. It's kiagroom.net because that is my other name. I have a lot of names. So if you feel like reading poetry, you can go there. And my small chapbook is available through Pork Belly Press, who published it. I don't have any copies right now, but they do. So yeah, that's my screed, my babble about me.
If you'd like to find me, you can find me at mothmana.com for a gallery of my digital art, as well as to links to other things such as information on readings and my Patreon, which is for this podcast, and it's patreon.com/mothmana. You can also come hang out on Instagram at mothmanatarot, and if you would like constant occult shit posting, that is Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
At Mana Aelin.
It's good shit. That was a great tweet yesterday about K-pop being Kentucky pop. It's fantastic. I've been getting to hear all the drafts as they come through in Mana's brain.
Yeah, there's a lot that don't make it for good reason. Some of them are, like, weirdly aggressive, I realize.
No, I love it.
I had one about, like, Witcher on a unverifiable personal gnosis that's like, this is kind of rude. I'm not going to post it.
No, I'm a big fan. I think Mana should lower their filters and just post on the Twitter off the top of the head, but...
Well, before we fully close, I do want to say, Celeste and I pulled cards for before this interview, like, what should be our approach to it? And I pulled three cards, and I've never pulled this succession of cards. It was the Knight of Cups, the Knight of Wands, and the Knight of Pentacles. And the court cards represent people, typically, and knights are in pursuit of things. And I was like, wow, I guess we're each a knight today.
Yeah, it was funny really too because you were talking about maybe Darien coming and we didn't know if he was going to or not. Yeah. And then Mana pulled those three cards and we were like, I think Darien's coming. And indeed he did not. So
Yeah. That's crazy though. But that's all weird. Knights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's wild.
Which knight do you think that you are?
So when Dan did the reading for me, the majority of the cards that he pulled were the Wands.
Interesting.
And when I did a reading in Sedona, I had someone do a reading for me that was and this was before the podcast came out, and they were like, are you working on something and this story that you're trying to tell people? And like went into this thing and I was like, maybe.
You know, that makes a lot of sense to me mm-hmm. for you, isn't it? Which one are you?
I want to say too, with the Will and Wands.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I want to put you as the Knight of Cups because the dream association.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
You do have a lot of dreams.
You don't feel very pentacly to me as a human generally,
mm-hmm.
but maybe that's so.
This is a little, this is Geralt of Rivia-y. Forever
being.
That's
true.
I'm on this relentless Witcher kick that Celeste doesn't know about, and I keep berating her with Witcher lore.
Later tonight, as we unwind before our trip back home tomorrow, we're going to like watch some episodes of The Witcher so that I can fully understand.
Yeah, I'm reading it.
It's good.
I haven't read it,
but I've watched the show, mm-hmm. and it's fantastic.
So there we go. We're the three knights, the three musketeers. Awesome.
And you got the three of cups when you pulled, too.
I did. I was like, it's definitely just going to be three of us.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
I also got the magician, so there you go.
Did you? Yeah. I thought maybe you'd have the hangman for a minute. I was like, oh my god, what is the hangman?
You put that sticker on your...
Yeah, this is but quietly before we close out, this is a bit weird. So I got a new deck in the mail right before I left. Came with a little sticker pack, and it was only 5 stickers or so, but it was all cards from the Major Arcana. And I was thinking about which one I wanted to put on my new water bottle. You know, why not? And I was flipping through, and there were a couple that I really liked. But intuitively, I was like, you know, I think I need to stick the Hanged Man sticker on this water bottle, actually. And I bought the water bottle specifically to come to Kentucky because I thought we were going to be hiking a lot more than we were. And then when we arrived, you were like, really want to talk about the Hanged Man? And I was mm-hmm. like, that's the sticker. That's the sticker
so
on the water.
That's so crazy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's wild.
You pulled a card for the trip and you brought it with you.
I did. Exactly.
That's so crazy.
Well, we are going to do an Estes session and I'm going to record with the audio. So if you are listening to this on Patreon, it is likely eventually you will hear that. That will be the surprise for this trip.
So. At a later time.
Yes. Again, thank you, Nathan, for having us. Thank you, Celeste, for joining me on this wild adventure.
I'm so happy.
And thank you to myself for actually doing something really weird.
Doing all of this. Yeah. I'm going to get the spirit box.